Anthropocene. Did you think that's a geological survey question? It might be, but we're going to connect the dots because this is Father Voskin, and I put it all together between the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, and this time geological as well. This is episode number 525 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Did you ever think that maybe your pets, even if they're not pets, those creatures of the wilderness that sometimes you interact with, sometimes you tend to, might say something about your faith? I'm sitting here looking at these birds in my backyard. Now, I have a little feeder, and it's positioned a little bit high off the ground. It's a feeder for birds, and I put in wild bird seeds. I try to do it every day and don't get to it every day. I kind of guess I guess some of the birds miss out when I don't do it. But I try to get to them regularly. It's just really beautiful because I put bird seeds in this feeder. Like I said, a little bit high off the ground, because if it was closer to the ground, my dog would kind of get to it. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the attraction of bird seeds, but he just kind of... Well, I should say that she's still a puppy, so she just likes to go to town on whatever I put anywhere. Even a plastic bottle the other day. Wow, I couldn't believe it. She chewed off the top and then brought me like this 1 gallon of water in her teeth. Like, I just... incredible. Anyway, I have this little feeder, and I put it in my backyard. And... it took a while. I got to tell you honestly that for several days I even wondered where the seeds went, because I didn't see the birds. But now it's at a point where I put the seeds in, and within the next, I'd say 15 minutes to a half an hour, birds will start coming and they'll start eating. It's a matter of routine. And they know that the seeds are there. And it is just so beautiful. And I start thinking about it. You know, in the past we've had, well, anybody who's had family knows that, you know, pets are a part of family life. Whether it's big pets like dogs or cats, or whether it's small ones like little goldfish or fish in general, or birds. And you put them in cages. And there's something odd about keeping birds in cages, isn't there? They're just so beautiful. And you know they should fly. And then they do some other things to these birds. They clip their wings so they don't fly away. It's okay to fly around the house, but not away. But you keep them in cages. Well, all of a sudden, what's happened is now my backyard looks like a giant bird cage. Well, yeah, I hate to think of it that way. But yeah, for me, it's just such a pleasure. You watch these little birds coming and taking the seeds, and they come from all over. And every so often the dog will go over there and scare them away, but they kind of like interact with her too. They know that, you know, when she comes by, they run away. It's sort of like a teasing match. And then if you look closely up on the telephone poles and on the trees, you'll see little squirrels. Of course, the squirrels come and they attack Susan's pomegranates. I mean, she's got this beautiful tree on the side, and then we find these pomegranates attacked. We've got little grapes in the other side of the garden growing, and somebody always gets to these things. But these birds are just beautiful. You watch them fly, and they come and they eat the little seeds. And I was thinking about this idea of feeding the birds particularly because just recently I've been exposed to this idea of our involvement with nature and the world. In an article I read about Anthropocene. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Of course, anthro, we know that part, right? Anthropocene. Let's call it that way, Anthropocene. It's unprecedented right now, but it's basically our unprecedented because never before in human history have we been so involved with nature, with the climate, with things all around us. But it occurred to me, I'm feeding those birds. Those birds now have a dependence on this human being to bring their seeds to them. And no matter what pet, even pets, I mean, I guess at some point dogs were wild, right? They'd go out and they'd hunt their prey and they'd eat. And that's how they've survived. But now we have nice dog food. And for some reason, somebody said that, you know, a cow or a horse or whatever they use is at a different, I know it's even odd saying that about a horse, but somehow that these lives are expendable to feed other animals. There's an order somewhere, right? Like you look at dog food and it says made with real lamb meat. Okay, so somebody's decided that the lamb is not really a pet, but is a food source. And so the pet becomes the dog. And they are now reliant on us human beings for their food. The birds. They don't need to hunt, right? They don't need to go find worms in the ground or whatever they do. They don't need to go and pick at bushes because they know this human being is coming out there and providing them with seeds, conveniently purchased at the store, conveniently packaged. And he puts his hand inside this bottle and takes out a bunch of seeds and feeds them. And of course, it plays to my enjoyment because all of a sudden, my whole backyard is like a giant bird cage. It's beautiful. You sit there and you watch the birds coming, everything, and it's for your human enjoyment. Now, it's okay, right? It's fine. But where is our responsibility to our environment? And I know some real hardliners will go, well, God created the universe, created the earth for our enjoyment. And that's nice to say. Now, if you want to buy into that tradition, that's okay. But where does the extent of enjoyment, where does that enjoyment turn to our responsibility to do something back for the environment? For instance, today, on the bigger scale, the global scale, right? You can say the same thing that, you know, everything has been created for us. But you know that our use of fossil fuels, you know that carbon footprints are really creating havoc. There's global warming. And no matter what politicians say, it is true. The ice caps are melting, sea levels are rising, and the planet is warming up, and fish migrations, all of this due to human use of the environment, sometimes responsibly, sometimes irresponsibly. And when it's irresponsible, of course, we have to pay the consequences. Now, there are many responsible. I mean, think about the entire idea of endangered species. Think about the entire zoo programs that we have throughout the world. The idea of having zoos, not just for our personal entertainment, of our personal enjoyment, much like I would be sitting in there and watching these birds come in this giant cage called my backyard. You know, you go to a zoo and you enjoy these different animals, but at the same time, it's a way of preserving certain species. And so, yes, I'm feeding these birds. I'm feeling like, okay, yeah, these birds now have some food for today. But it also means that they are not hunting. We take care of our pets, but it also means they're not hunting. Now, you know, I know. Now, listen really carefully, okay? So I'm not making a case for us to give up on pets. I don't want to see a bunch of hungry dogs walking the streets and, you know, growling and everything. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our human interaction with the environment. And we are interacting. Anthropocene. We are responsible for what's going on. Never, it's unprecedented. Never in human history at the rate that we're interacting and we are affecting the environment. Now, this turns out to be a geological issue. because they've seen it in strata that they've looked at. They've marked different areas. And this comes from the geologist, from people who have done excavations, and they've seen how people interacting. Now, you got to remember, on this planet Earth, when you think about time, they measure them in eons. They measure them in eras. You know, when we talk about time, think about Jesus coming 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago. Multiply that not by 5, 2,000. Multiply that not by 50, but multiply it by 500. That same period of time, 2,000 years. Multiply it by 500. 500 of those 2,000 years make 1 million years. And when you're talking about these huge amounts of time, tens of millions of years, and how the planet has changed and sustained us, and the ice ages and things like that, you're talking about astronomical numbers which are very difficult for us to comprehend. So when we look at it, okay, yeah, the sea level is rising within the course of the last century. Well, because at unprecedented rates, we are interacting with that environment, taking and using those resources. And now, you know, I said there's irresponsible, there's responsible. Now they're looking at changing over fuels, at reusable energy, at wind power. I live in Southern California, and anybody who's familiar with the terrain down here, you know that there's a lot of valleys. Some of the valleys, including Northern California, where they've put up these giant windmills. And yeah, you know, windmills that you used to see in those nice, the Sound of Music, you'd see them off in a distance. Oh, now they're talking about these huge windmills which provide power for certain geographical areas. You look at hydroelectric power and how we've been able to dam up water. Well, we dam the water, and it provides reservoirs. It also provides power, but it also affects the ecosystem, because you've got birds, you've got wildlife, you've got fish that are now going through. You look at how we go in into ocean areas, and we have harvested the ocean for our use, for food sources, okay? And in so doing, we've created these giant traps where we harvest fish. But in so doing that, we've also left trails where you have unsuspecting animals who've been caught up in these traps, been caught up with hooks in their mouths, and have to go on living like that. So where is our responsibility? Now, it begins with small little things. Small little things. Okay, I feed these birds. Those birds do not have to do their work. Well, guess what? By not doing the work, they are not taking care of those little bugs that are also taking care of my plants and eating away my plants, because there's no birds that are hungry enough to go after those bugs. And so everything is interrelated. And this is, I'm making a smaller case for it. What the geologists were talking about, but they're talking about Anthropocene. In other words, the humans having an impact on the Earth, on our environment. Now, remember, I start off every show telling you that I'm going to connect the dots. Yeah, well, we're just doing it right now, right? This time we're connecting geological dots with spiritual dots. What is our responsibility? And like I said, there's some hardliners that will come out and say, well, God has created this. Now, we've got to get away from these kind of ideas, because, again, this is where you see what I've been sharing with you for how many years now. When I talk about the truth of the Bible not being factual, in other words, the Bible explains a lot of good things. And it explains it in languages that people can understand. But that doesn't make it factual. That doesn't mean you go out there and you just start raping the planet because it's yours to rape. It doesn't work like that. And it can't work like that. This turns out to be a major, major ethical issue. And so I'm sharing this with you because, you know, you look around and look at the small things. We talk about giant things like global warming. We talk about the populations, the endangered species. But look at the small little things that we have in our lives. You feed your cat food, okay? Someone has made the decision that the animal that's inside of your cat food is okay to is expendable, okay? And that becomes the cat's food. Cat eats it. Is now dependent not on his or her hunting skills, doesn't have to catch the mice anymore, although they love to do that, but knows that it's getting a square meal just by existing. Now, do you see what I'm talking about? Do you see where I'm going with all this? Okay, now I want to connect more dots. I want to connect it to last Sunday's scriptural reading. If you were in church, you heard it read. It came to us from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13. We are still in the season of Pentecost. In a couple weeks, we hit the Feast of Transfiguration. But in this Pentecost moment, we're looking at the scriptural passage prescribed to us by church fathers. Matthew, chapter 13, verses 24 through 30. Now listen to it first, okay? And then we're going to make the case. Another parable he, Jesus, put before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also, and the servants of the household came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How is it then that there are weeds?' He said to them, 'An enemy has done it.' The servants said, 'Then do you want us to go and gather them?' And he said, 'No, lest in gathering the weeds you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and at harvest time I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Simple little parable given to us by Jesus. Simple, yes, but like most of his parables, there's so much there to talk about humanity, about our responsibility, about what life is. And this is Jesus talking to our soul. This is what he did with parables. Parables are not just stories. They're not just cute little stories to get us to wander. You know, as we're going to bedtime, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Well, it teaches us to take the middle porridge because we're not too hot, not too cold. That also was a parable, right? It taught you something. But this is not what Jesus was doing. He was taking these very simple ideas. Simple ideas because the people he was talking to were simple people. Just like when the early books of the what we call the Old Testament were written, the people were simple. There was no knowledge of evolution, of you know, you had people living there. How did we come about? Well, God came and God made a man. And how did women come? Oh, well, God went into Adam's rib and took it out and made a woman. Okay. It works. It worked back then. It worked back then. I guess there's people who still it works for. But think about it for a moment. These are just ways of understanding complex ideas. What is Jesus teaching us in this parable? Something very complex. It's about the good and the bad. About evil in the midst of goodness. It's about looking at God and asking the question, if there is a good God, why does this God allowed the evil to persist? Why don't we just go in there and pick it? God certainly has it in his power to eradicate evil. Why doesn't he do that? Or use us. Why don't we just go in there and pick the weeds out of the wheat? No, you can't do that, because in picking up a weed, you might uproot a wheat. the good stuff might go away with the bad stuff. Well, this is one kind of explanation, right? Okay, so we got an explanation, but what about us? What do we do? Going to wait right after the song of the day, okay? We're going to keep moving forward. Like I've told you in the past, sometimes we just need a little breather. I hope I've given you some of the groundwork, no pun intended, the groundwork to where we're going to be shooting off of. Okay, bear with me for a little bit. I'm going to play you a song because it's just so appropriate. We're talking about wheat. Horovel. This is a Gomidas Vartabed song. Gomidas Vartabed means he's a monk of the church, means that he went to the divine liturgy, he understood Badarak, he understood our relationship with God as a sacred one, okay? Gomidas Vartabed, prolific musician, churchman, wrote this song, Horovel. It is about the experience of gathering the wheat. And you know what? I even went ahead and I did a Google search on it because I wanted to just get it for you. And this kind of like blew my mind. I did a Horovel search. What is Horovel? Listen to what it says. The song sung during the tilling of soil intended, are you ready? Intended to cheer up the animals and the peasants. Wow. You're picking the wheat and you sing a song meant to cheer up the animals, the peasants, spirituality. Hey, Father Voskin, what are you talking about? You're feeding birds in your backyard. What does that have to do with spirituality? Oh, take a chill pill, folks. It has everything to do with it. It has to do with our interaction with our environment, with our world, with the goodness that is all around us. Now, I have many, many versions of Horovel because it happens to be one of my favorites. And, you know, long ago, I established somewhere that I just really thought the Hovhannes Badalyen version was the penultimate. Then along came some Duduk versions. Even Ara Gevorkian has written a fairly nice version of, in my estimation, excuse me. I have many, many different ones. But this one came out a few years ago. I want to share this with you. And I will also include the video of this on the show notes. It's just really worth watching this, okay? This is Ruben Matevosyan and Hovhannes Shahbazyan. I like the video because you see the master turning over responsibility to the student. It speaks on many levels to me. Anyway, Gomidas Vartabed, Horovel, performed by Ruben Matevosyan and Hovhannes Shahbazyan.
Oh.
Is that incredible or what? Horovel, the name of the song written by Gomidas Vartabet and performed today by Rupen Mativosyan and Hovhannes Shahbazyan. And as I said a few minutes ago, I think the video is also worth watching on this one. So we will include a link also on today's show notes to the video. Do watch it. It's well worth it. It's 6 minutes, I think. It takes you places. It really, really takes you places. Horovel, a song, as mentioned earlier, about tilling the soil, but intended to cheer up the animals and the peasants. We're talking today about Anthropocene, about our human involvement with our world. We're talking today about our responsibility, about what it is, how do we interact? Where is that interaction with our world, our environment, with what God has given us? I hope you enjoyed it. I've always been fascinated by the parables of Jesus that refer to objects in nature. And you realize that, well, Jesus was talking to people who, for whom this was their life. It was an agrarian society, agriculture. They were harvesting. If he was today, if he was, for instance, in Silicon Valley, I'm sure this parable would take on a different tone. You know, like, why is there a bug? Why is there malware on my computer? Can you take the malware off? Well, if you take out the malware, are you sure you're not going to be touching the kernel that is at the heart of the computer? And in taking the malware off, you may damage or at the very least compromise the integrity of your computer program. Might this have been the parable that Jesus said? It might have been. It might have been. He spoke to people at their level. But behind each of these parables, there was a truth that was beyond time, beyond circumstances. And the truth in this parable today is about God's interaction with us. Why is there evil in the world? Why doesn't he eradicate? Why did evil come in the first place? Yeah, big question. It's actually at the heart of many, many traditions. People, since the first day that they saw death, have asked this question, right? I love my wife. I love my husband. I love my children. I love my parents. Why can't we go on living forever like this? Why does death have to come along? Why does death have to come along suddenly? Why does evil? Okay, my neighbor and I, we don't get along, but why do we have to hit each other? Our countries. You know, this is my boundary. This is their boundary. Why do we have to go across those borders? Look what's happening today. Here in America, this past week, we have been overloaded with issues of ethics, of our responsibility. Where is our responsibility in this equation? When we hear about refugees coming into America and at the border, children are separated from their parents. And the obvious question that people ask is, okay, well, wait a minute. These people are coming here. They're arrested. Since when do you get arrested and have the right to take your children with you to jail? Of course, anybody who is arrested gets separated from their children. Yeah, but this isn't a normal arrest. These people have come here seeking asylum, have come here looking for something good, something they couldn't find in their world. As Armenians, of course, I understand that. Yes, why is every Armenian that is in America, actually go a little bit further, every Armenian that's in diaspora is there because they fled persecution. It was at the end of the genocide that the diaspora got created. And thank God there were countries that opened up their borders, opened up their doors to us. And now it's other countries coming in. And instead of us championing the rights of refugees, we are ready to point fingers and say, well, they're coming in and they're doing this and they're doing that, and separate punishment instead of talking about our obligation. This is where I want to go with this, because I shared with you some of our responsibilities that we have, that we take upon ourselves. I feed a bird, right? That bird doesn't have to go out and hunt for its food anymore. Those little bugs now are free to roam my garden. The cat, you feed the cat, doesn't have to go out and find mice anymore, right? You feed the dog, it doesn't have to go walking around the streets and clearing up rodents. I guess that's what dogs do. It's been so long that they haven't been undomesticated, right? That you don't remember what dogs do besides give us pleasure, besides give us that friendship that we long for. So we have pets. We take care of them. But every action that we have affects something else. There's an interaction, an interconnectivity, an interdependence that I've tried to share with you here on The Next Step. When I say connecting the dots, we are all connected. Every one of our actions affects, influences something else we do. And those actions are caused because of not God's doing, but our free will. Created in the image of God, we are created as human beings to be able to plan our own life. It's not written for you. If it was, what would it mean? It would mean that you are a robot. One of my favorite childhood shows that I sadly, it's been resurrected on Netflix. I haven't even had a chance to watch it. I'm dying to watch it. Not 2 minutes to just sit down and watch it. But one of my favorite childhood shows was Lost in Space, that had this incredible robot. I really wanted one of those robots. Wouldn't it be great? You program it, and it had this like little pack in it that had the program in it. And as we grew up, we realized, hey, those programs are not out of reach. We started programming our computers. I remember my first computer, it was a Timex Z1, was it called? It was a Sinclair. It was from England that Timex eventually bought. It had a flat keyboard. We would program it to do little things, to do little assignments. And what was so fascinating about it, it wouldn't tire. I remember one of the first programs that I wrote. It's a program to find prime numbers. And it would just go. And I would do it, you know, I would watch it on the screen, the little numbers coming up. 1, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13. Don't make me think about it. 17, 19. Anyway, it would go up and boom, boom, boom. It would just come out. These prime numbers would come up. And I'd watch it for maybe about 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Then you get tired because, you know, you're in the thousands and you're saying, okay, so what? Then you think to yourself, okay, well, wait. I'm getting tired just looking at this. How about if I ran it overnight? I did. I ran it for a few days. Little Timex, little computer. In fact, it was so little that the amount of memory it had, are you ready for this? Was 1K, 1 kilobyte was in its RAM. And of course, the first thing that they told you after you bought it is buy this memory expansion pack. And I'll never forget, it was just the same cost, maybe a little bit less than the computer. And it was gave you 16 kilobytes of memory. Wow, big deal. So I ran this program that I wrote overnight, over a few days, and it never tired. It just kept on finding more and more prime numbers. Boom, 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 boom. You know, one right after, until you got into 6, 7, 8 digits. And if I remember right, I think that I hit a capacity where it couldn't actually articulate the entire number, but it gave it to me in exponential form. In other words, 1.37, times 10 to the 23rd or whatever it was. It's these absurd numbers, huge numbers. And I think I did the same thing for pi. Yes. We expanded pi. We got, you know, I did that an overnight, 2 nights, 3 nights, maybe even for a week, because then we lived up in the Silicon Valley, and then we'd travel down to L.A., see friends. If I remember right, I think I programmed a computer, and I said, okay, go for it. And it went on pi for a week until we got back home, and then there it was. It was still doing it. That's a robot. That's a program. That's a computer program. That's not what you and I are. We get tired. We can't do that. We're not here to just take orders. We have the capacity, the ability, the God-given right to be able to create our own lives. And we so choose to do those things. The story of the wheat and the weeds is exactly about that. At night, the enemy came and planted weed. Who is that enemy? Well, guess what? It's us. Yeah, get away. Just as I told you, get away from those fantasies about the Garden of Eden being two people there and the rib opening up and anything. The same thing. Get away from the fantasy that the devil's this thing with two horns and a pitchfork and the tail. And I know you don't believe it, but still in our heads, we still think about a personified evil. The evil is all around us. It's each of us participating in this. Does that mean we're bad? No, it means that we are part of the flow. It means that at some point we need to take on that responsibility to realize that we're planting weed. And you need to plant the wheat. You need to let the wheat grow. You can't choke these things. And so we look at our environment. Yeah, we see it's horrible. We see pollution in many of the big cities. We were in Phoenix a week ago, and you know, it was very hot, 110 over there. That's on our Fahrenheit scale, by the way, okay? Yeah, no, it's not Celsius. You'd be boiling, right? I think the blood would curdle, to be very crude about it. No, Fahrenheit scale, 110, 112. And then we see these giant signs on the freeway. Run air conditioning, stay indoors. Pollution alert. People with breathing problems, stay indoors. Okay, well, what's going on? This is like big cities, and this is not unusual in many big cities. And this is in refined American cities. You look at third world countries where they don't have those regulation on what pollutants they throw out into the atmosphere. And so we've created a world that has pollution in it. We've created a world where there is global warming. And science tells you, hey, you know, the sea levels are going up. Why? Well, because if you take a glass of water and you put an ice cube in it, it'll float, but in a few minutes, that ice cube will melt and it makes the volume a little bit closer to the top. It adds to it. Well, guess what? Those giant glaciers, they're melting, and as they're going into the water, these levels are going up. And we're not talking about ice cubes. We're talking about mountains falling into the ocean, and they're affecting us and every one of our things. Just as I gave those birds seed, it affected the other little the little spiders and the animal, the little bugs that were crawling around the garden. Same way, these polar ice caps, these giant icebergs are melting. Guess what? Those poor polar bear, they used to make their life on these things. Now they need to find refuge. They need to find somewhere else to go. My God, don't look too far. The other night we're walking our dog. Yes, domesticated animal. And what do we see? Right in the middle of the city, coyote. Coyote going right by us. Now, one's a dog, one's a coyote. They look alike, you know, I mean, structurally. Four legs, tail, snout, you know. But coyotes are dangerous. They go after little pets too. They're not domesticated. What's it doing here? Well, we've created such heat that the coyotes, they're telling us that they're coming down off of the mountains, off of their habitats, seeking water because we have droughts going on, wasting our water on things that don't matter. And we're all guilty of that. We're all part of the equation. And until we realize that we are interdependent, we cannot answer that question properly. Why does God allow evil to persist? Because he allows it because we're allowed. If you're going to stop that evil, it takes you to be a member of that equation. Yes, a member of that equation. One plus two are the two members of an equation that equal three. You can't equal three without a one, without a two. Each of you are a member. You can't say one equals three. You can't say two equals three. One plus two equals three. If you want the entire equation, you have to be a member of it. And that's the invitation that the Christian is invited to. That's the invitation extended to the Christian, excuse me. We are invited to the solution. A solution which has a respect, which has our environment, which says that, yes, there is Anthropocene, an unprecedented time right now where we're living, where our human interactions are impacting the earth in a way. Unprecedented is also a code word, which I should say is for exponentially. Whereas before it would be small steps. Now it's quick. Things are just moving quickly. I mean, we just excited because we have these cell phones in our pockets. We have these computers that we used to have on our desktops. Now they're just sitting in our pockets. They're accessible, but they're at a cost, right? Human labor. We talk about, well, oh, Apple is such a great company. Yeah, all their labor's in China. It took many years. Don't forget those early years. They were using different questionable labor. Yeah, okay, now it took time, took legislation, cleaning up acts, but it all requires us to be a member of that equation. All too often as Christians, we look for a God that's a Superman that's going to come out of those clouds and say, okay, here I am, I'll save the day. When in reality, it's us that have to take the initiative, that have to feel confident enough to say, I am not a programmed robot. You cannot program me for 2-3 days of defining what pi is or what the next prime number is. A robot can do that. A computer can do that. And guess what? We'll never, ever, ever tire. That's what was fascinating about the early works that we did on computers. And that's what's fascinating about your computer that you're listening to right now. You're listening to my voice thanks to a computer that does not tire, right? Whether it's on your desktop, whether it's in your pocket, it's coming to you because there's some server that does not tire delivering this little MP3 file through the internet to you and the routers that are working. These are computers. They're not human beings. They do a program. We as human beings get to push the envelope and go beyond the program and start defining the programs that define us. And that's what I'm inviting you to do as Christians today, to understand that we are part of the solution. It's easy to say, yes, the enemy came at night and dropped the weeds and say that, oh, you mean we are the enemy? We are part of the problem? Yes, and that means that we are part of the solution. We can solve these things. And when you get to that point, you realize that you cannot complain about the bad until you realize that you are part of that solution. I cannot complain about the bugs in my garden if I'm going to fill the tummies of all the birds with my seeds. I've got to allow them to do what they're going to do. You can't complain about mice in your house if you're going to feed your cat. I know I'm going, you get the analogy, right? I'm hoping you're with me, okay? I'm not telling you that you have mice in your house, but you get the idea that we are impacting our environment. We are impacting all the things around us. And until we start understanding we are part of the problem, we are now part of the solution, we can't understand that we have also a responsibility to our world, to our environment, to all the goodness that is around us. We're not robots, we're people. Opening our eyes, seeing a beauty in this world, seeing that this world needs to be nurtured, that the environment around us, that the simple birds, that the simple animals around us need that caressing, need that care, need that attention, and need that nutrition that we give. And by doing that to these birds and these animals and these the natural things around us, guess what? The next step is only obvious. You now start doing it toward the human occupants of this world. Aha! Did we make a connection? We now have a responsibility to everyone. We have a responsibility to one another because we are interconnected with one another. That's what Christ tells us. It's a very Christian idea. Anthropocene was a word that we learned today. It's a word that tells how we impact the world. It's a word that Jesus talked about when he came. He didn't use that word. He talked about the weed, the wheat. He talked about the ground. He talked about the simple terms, ones that we can understand. Here's Susie to take us into the next portion. I'm going to come back and share with you some of the things that are coming up, and we'll call it a day.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you. Hey, I loved getting all those emails that you sent me this week. I loved all the little comments about our last show. I love the nice little things. I want to welcome Mimi. She is our new employee of the month, we'll call her, okay? She just joined the In His Shoes staff, and Mimi is going to be working on putting together some of the internal stuff some of the files, because what we did is we started realizing, wow, we have a body of work. In His Shoes, Epostle. I think this all came about after we celebrated our 10th anniversary. In celebrating that 10th anniversary, we saw the body of work that we had put together, and it said, okay, it's time that we start organizing that. And you know, when you support In His Shoes, you're really supporting something that is big, that has a potential. Yeah, we're not a church. We're not pretending to be a church. We're just trying to get out there and spread this word that we have, like we said today, an obligation. We have a responsibility. And once we start realizing and defining these responsibilities, we understand that we are part of a bigger solution, not just for our environment, but for the entire world. We, each one of us. Well, that about does it for today. I want to thank you for joining us and give you a couple dates. One is July 8th. It's the Transfiguration Feast. I'm going to be at St. Sarkis Church in Santa Clarita, California. And also on July 12th, it's a Thursday. If you feel like taking a one-day pilgrimage with us, we're going to be going out to the St. Garabed Armenian Church out in Palm Desert. And you can find all that information on our website at all the usual spots. But I want to end today with a beautiful shout out to some dear friends of ours, Adam and Courtney, Grandma Seza, on the birth and arrival of their new son, grandson. God bless and all the best to you and your growing family. On behalf of the wonderful team who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
You're seeing the same sky as we are.